morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA Meeting on Air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and there are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, this morning we'll be hearing from three people from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous who'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. So thanks guys for coming in this morning to share your story. And to start off, Kathleen, would you like to share?
Thanks, Steve. I'm Kathleen, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Kathleen.
Hi Kathleen.
It's good to be here, thank you for asking me. So I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous 7.5 years now. So I started drinking when I was 13. The first time I drove, I drank. I generally, in my teen years, I generally drank. I couldn't have one drink. I'd have multiple drinks. I never was interested in having just one drink. I did grow up in an alcoholic family. And what was normal for me in that family was growing up, there was always alcohol around. I can remember quite clearly at Christmas, just crates and crates of alcohol coming in the house, and it would be gone almost as quickly as it came in the house. And what struck me was Christmas and those times when we'd have parties were quite magical. They were quite happy. And, you know, everyone always drank and always drank a lot, and that was quite normal. And that's the environment I grew up in, so heaps of drinking just seemed really normal to me. It was when I was about 12 that my father was diagnosed as an alcoholic and went through rehab. And he did go through Alcoholics Anonymous, but it never took for him. But that started at about the same time he was in recovery, I started drinking. And I'm sure there is some coincidence there, I don't know. However, I did, so I did pick up around 13 and continued till I was in my late 30s. During that time, what drinking was for me was I felt like drinking took away any responsibility I had for anything, really. I always felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. I always felt like that I couldn't cope with things. And once I had a drink, all that went away. Like I felt like I felt things were easy. I felt relaxed. I felt like I fit in. I felt like I was funny. And I might have been those things. I don't really know how I was. And drinking was probably quite normal. It seemed quite normal to me. I always drank with people who drank like I did. So it seemed quite normal. And when I look back on my teens and my 20s, I did do things like blackout. I never could have just the casual drink. But everyone I knew was like that. We used to often joke about going to the Betty Ford Clinic or, you know, have a laugh about that and then keep drinking. You know, there wasn't any, you know. And it got worse as I got into my late 20s. I it was generally every night. But again, the pack I hung out with all drank. So, like that. So there was never, I always felt the same. And to think about a life without drinking was incomprehensible because that was my whole life. You know, if I didn't drink, I wouldn't have a social life. And that was quite important to me. It all did start to get a bit worse in my 30s. I started to get really awful hangovers. I'd never gotten hangovers before. But I still drank, no matter what. And I would still, you know, there would be times when I would would try and control my drinking. I would only have one or only have two if I was driving. I could occasionally do that, and it got harder and harder as the years went on. And towards the end, what was happening was I was going out and drinking. I was driving home, but I was parking a couple blocks away from my house. And then I'd act as if I had taken a taxi home. So my husband worked nights, so he wouldn't see the car if he came home at night or whatever. So I just was hiding things. So my drinking had become quite obvious, even to my husband, who happened to be not an alcoholic, but quite a heavy drinker. So he noticed that there was a problem and would call me on it. I had no willingness around drinking. I actually put down another substance first that was causing me some problems. And the last thing I wanted to be was an alcoholic. That's what I had grown up with, and I definitely wasn't that. I thought I must know better than this because my parents were both alcoholics. But it didn't matter. When I was in my late 30s, my father actually passed away from complications related to alcoholism because he had never actually gotten sober. He had never been able to maintain any sobriety. And it was about that time that I entered Alcoholics Anonymous. At that point, there must have been something that drove me into Alcoholics Anonymous, but I don't think I actually believed I was an alcoholic. I don't know that I actually thought I was powerless over alcohol, and that, you know, that's obviously, that's the first step that's necessary for me to start my recovery. So I did start in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I say I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't actually working this program. I wasn't sober. So I did one meeting a week. I had a sponsor that I didn't use. I didn't start working the recommended steps of this program as they're outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went crazy. It's often shared in this fellowship that if a heavy drinker puts down drink, if they're having problems, their life gets better. But if an alcoholic puts down a drink, their life and doesn't do anything else, their life slowly falls apart or quickly falls apart. In my case, it was slowly. And my marriage started to unwind. I started to have a lot of troubles at work, a lot of stress-related, anxiety-related problems. And about 2 years into my sobriety, I nearly had a nervous breakdown. What happened for me was one day, I just remember sitting on the floor of my house craving a drink or any substance that would take me away, that give me that feeling of no responsibility, take me to oblivion. And I had never had a craving that strong, even when I was drinking. And that's what finally convinced me that I was actually powerless. And that's really when I took the first step. And it was from that point that I actually used my sponsor. I started going to meetings, and I joined what we call the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I actually became a part of. I remember before that time, I used to think of alcoholics as them. I didn't think of them as us because I clearly didn't think I was part of that. I was a very reluctant participant. But after that, I put both feet in. And what it's given me is, what happened was my marriage did fall apart. I did stop working for a while. I worked my program and I got through it, and everything that happened to me, a lot, you know, things happen in life. So it's not that bad things stopped happening or, you know, things happen in life for a reason. But I knew how to deal with them without drinking, and I had the fellowship around me to show me. So what I have today and what I had that got me through those hard times was people around me who had gone ahead of me, who had done the steps, and who had been through things that I've been through, that I was going through, or that had been worse than I had been through, and they got through it without drinking, without having a nervous breakdown, without, you know, hiding in bed for weeks on end. And today I have that. I have a life. I have a life because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I actually owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you for asking me to share.
Great. Thanks, Kathleen. Thanks. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. And John Boy, do you want to share?
Yeah, I'd love to share, actually. But I was just listening to that from you, Kathleen, and you mentioned your dad. And I'll come to the reason why I've mentioned that in a second. The history of my drinking was like any young man out and about with his mates. It's all pretty good, Saturday nights, Friday nights, whatever, and never thought twice about it. And then over a period of years, probably out about 10 or 15 years, I realised that every social event, every sporting event that I went to, and at the time I was playing outdoor bowls for about, had been playing at that time for 10 or 12 years, and I realised I was always the last person to leave the bar. Got in my car, drove home, and I tried to temper that. And eventually, not only the drinking became problematical for me, but so did another addiction, gambling. And that involved being at a bar, gambling at a bar with the televisions and the TAB. And in about the year 2000, a young guy said to me, he was working at the bar, and he said to me, "Do you like losing money hand over fist every weekend?" And I was absolutely shocked. Why would someone speak to me like that? And I went back and sat at the table with my friend, and I said, "You know what a little so-and-so said to me?" Repeated what he'd said. And the pig-headed side of me said, "I'll show him." And from that day to this, in 12, 15 years, I've never been back to that bar, never had a drink in a bar. But cunningly, my alcoholism got worse. I justified drinking at home by the fact that I wasn't gambling, I wasn't driving a vehicle, I wasn't spending money on taxis backwards and forwards. And the one bottle of Bacardi that used to last me 6 months in the house became a bottle of Bacardi a month, became a bottle of Bacardi a week, eventually a bottle of Bacardi a day, followed by any number of bottles of wine to go with it. And I used to make excuses not to go to work so I could drink. I'd plan it. I'd come home from work one day and say, "Well, I'm not going to work tomorrow, I'm going to stay home and drink." And there was a period of 2 years I had more days off work drinking than I was actually required to go to work. And the reason I mentioned the fact that you mentioned your father is my father had said to me as a very young man, a 16-year-old, he said, "Son," he said, "what do you want to do when you leave school?" I said, "Well, I'm not sure, Dad." I said, "I wanted to be a vet, but the maths and the physics have got me screwed. And I'll be okay. Things will work out." And for the one and only time that I can remember my father raising his hand at me, he said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "I don't care what you make of yourself in life, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a garbage collector, or a drunk in the gutter," he said, "I don't give a continental. So long as you're honest, you'll always have me." And years and years later, after he died, I woke up one morning after 10 or 12 years of consistent, virtually daily drinking and 8 months off work due to an injury or a collapse as a result of not enough alcohol in the system, that I realised I had one more shot at this. I pulled myself around smartly now while I still had a job, an element of health. But the biggest realisation for me was the one person I'd been lying to all that time was me. I couldn't look myself in the mirror and be honest and say, "John Boy, you've got a problem." And for me, that was the turning point where I reached out, asked for help, found CADS, found a detox unit, found family support, which had always been there, which I'd shunned, found support from my friends and my employer, and that had always been there, and I'd always kicked them in the teeth, found medical intervention, and I realised that I couldn't kick them in the teeth any longer. But basically I found the will that, A, I had to change what I was thinking, but I had to have a desire to stop. And that particular morning I had the desire, and I came to understand, certainly for me, that it wasn't so much the damage that I was inflicting on myself, it was the damage that I was doing to my friends, my family, my employer, and I actually had no concern for them or myself. And once I came to understand that, I found the ability to go that one day, the 2 days, the 3 days without picking, or without picking up a drink. But yes, I did need medical intervention. Without that, I would have been dead within 3 months. Now, 3.5 years down the track, going to AA meetings regularly, it being most Sunday nights, understanding the concept, well, for me, the concept of a higher power, and my higher power doesn't have a long flowing beard and a white robe. It could be a bird. It could be anything that I'm comfortable with, but I understand that somebody, something has been looking after me all this time, and there's a reason for me to be here. And for me, I choose to make that reason sharing my story wherever possible. And if I go through life only ever reaching one more person and managing to induce some change or help them to change to get better, to get off the alcohol or whatever addiction it is, I've done my part of the journey. The other lesson for me that I learned, particularly in CADS, was spirituality, and a lady was, it was Christmas, New Year, 4 months into recovery, and we'd combined two groups, and only two of us turned up, plus the moderator, and she said, tonight we're going to discuss spirituality, go and have a coffee, if you're not happy with discussing that. And I just rolled my eyes and thought, spirituality, God, church, yep, right. What she wrote on the wall was 11 different things. Not one of them mentioned the word religion or God, and it was how you reacted to adverse events, how you reacted to other people, how you treated other people, what you thought of other people. Nearly to the last of the 11 items, it was other people. And I eventually asked her a question, are you religious? She said, well, I go to church once a year, Easter or Christmas, but that's all. And I said, you've just answered a question for me. I understand now I can be a spiritual being, live a spiritual life, without having to sit in the front pew of a church and be God-fearing. For me, there is hope. And for me, it's as simple as I wake up every day, don't even think now about picking up a drink, it's just not an issue for me, and get on with my life and try and be an example to friends, family, workmates. So for me, in closing, it's just, I'll just share a story with you. I watched a movie the other night. Funnily enough, it's called Message in a Bottle. Some of you may have seen it or not. But the gist of this movie was about somebody that had put a message in a bottle, thrown it out to sea, and it was found by somebody that worked for the press. The end result of the meeting with the person that sent out the bottle and the person that found it was effectively the saying that you can choose one of two things, either yesterday or today. And for me, I've put yesterday behind me, and everything going forward is today. I don't look back. There's lessons learnt, and from there on, it's just moving forward. And I'll leave that with you there.
Great. Thanks, John Boy.
Thanks, John Boy.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. And Jeff, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm grateful to be sober today, and you know, I'm only sober as a result of having a spiritual awakening, as a result of working the 12 steps and the love and support I've found in AA. And you know, I've been given, you know, a life today that I could have never imagined when I was drinking. And I came here, was introduced to AA when I was 22 years old. The majority of my drinking I did, you know, as a student, at high school and at university, and you know, it was always like in the weekends or the school holidays or the summer holidays. And, you know, I'd live my whole week like waiting for the weekend, waiting for Friday night. And, you know, I knew if I went out Friday, Saturday would be written off, but I didn't care. You know, I was just living for that party. And, you know, I'd get to summer and, you know, I'd have 6 weeks or 3 months off school or university. And, you know, and I didn't have any commitments the next day. So in my mind, it was perfectly okay to drink, to blackout and, you know, sleep in all day. And I did that, you know. Every cent I had went on alcohol and cars pretty much and other substances as well, I guess. And, you know, and if I ran out of money, and, you know, in my mind, it was perfectly okay, you know, to steal alcohol or to steal money. Like, you know, I was able to justify that to myself. If I had the money, I would have paid for it, but I didn't, and I had to drink. And, you know, I'd steal from friends and family and, you know, wherever I could. And, you know, the consequences started to build up. I, you know, I was raised with, you know, good morals and ethics, but, you know, when it came to alcohol, I couldn't recall any of that stuff, you know. And, you know, I didn't believe in drink driving. I was completely against it. But, you know, after a few drinks, I wouldn't drive. But, you know, after a few more, I'd, you know, lose my sense of reality and, you know, and find myself in a car and blackout. And, at 21, I crashed a car and I wrote off the car that I hit. And, you know, I was arrested and processed and went to court and lost my license. And, you know, and it wasn't my first conviction either. You know, like the consequences of my drinking were rapidly building up, and my university studies were not working out as I'd intended. I was suspended for poor academic achievement, and all my hopes and dreams were slowly being stripped away from me. And I read an article in a magazine which talked about quarter-life crises, which I thought, you know, that must be me. Early 20s, have no direction, don't know what I want to do with my life, everything's falling apart, you know, that must be what it is. And, you know, but it wasn't a solution, you know, and I'd moved to the other end of the country, and I left all of, you know, my drinking buddies, all of my my usual hangouts, and proceeded to do the exact same thing, but worse, in another city. And, you know, it's, you know, quickly gravitated to people, like-minded individuals. And, you know, but my behaviour wasn't acceptable to them either, you know. And, you know, so the real rock bottom, though, the real consequences was happening in my heart and in my soul, you know. Like, the emptiness and the loneliness was growing. And, you know, that hopelessness and that sense of despair, and I just found myself spiraling into this dark, dark hole, and, you know, living to drink, but not even having enough, you know, motivation to go out and to find that, you know. And, you know, through this period, you know, after the drink driving accident, I was doing counselling and looking for other ways to control or moderate my drinking. I'd given up on the idea of quitting. I didn't think that was possible for me. And the more I was trying to control it, the more out of control it was getting. And eventually I reached a point of, you know, complete desperation and, you know, put myself into like a detox and then a rehab, and through that I was introduced to AA. I'd heard about it briefly before and had no interest in attending meetings. The thought of sitting in a room full of alcoholics scared me, and I had in my mind a vision of what I thought an alcoholic was like, and there was no way I wanted to be in a room with those people. And you know, but I got here and, you know, I saw people that, you know, had drunk like me and had thought like me and felt like me, who had found a new way to live. You know, they were living sober, they had a, you know, spiritual connection, they had a, you know, a program of living that worked, you know, they had what I wanted. And, you know, over the last 8 years I've relapsed a couple of times. I've learned a couple of hard life lessons, but, you know, it beat me down to a point where I could, you know, completely surrender to this program and, you know, admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that I couldn't manage my own life. And, you know, and accept a higher power, a God of my own understanding, into my life and turn my will and my life over to the care of that higher power. And, you know, and proceed to work. And what that meant for me was to proceed to it, to work the rest of the 12 steps. And, you know, today I carry that message to other alcoholics seeking recovery. You know, since getting sober, I've gone back to university, finished my degree and you know, gained employment in my chosen profession. I just got back from 3 years on my OE. Done meetings all through Canada and the States, England and Europe. And, you know, that was a dream of mine, you know, when I was drinking, is that I'd travel the world from one bar to the next, from one hostel to the backpackers. And when I was putting down the alcohol, I thought that dream, you know, was gone. And, you know, today I've found that I've been able to do all the things I dreamed of. I've been able to do them sober. And, you know, when I meet people and I travel in this fellowship, you know, I connect with them and I form strong friendships that last, you know. And, you know, if I'd been traveling from one bar to the next, that's not the sort of friendships I'd be making. And, you know, I just love this fellowship and I love, you know, the people in it and the message that it carries. And, you know, if you have a problem with drinking, you know, you want help, like we've got a solution that works and we'd love to see you at a meeting. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. This brings us towards the end of our meeting. Thanks, guys, for coming in this morning, sharing your experience, strength and hope. And we appreciate your time. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the Greater Auckland area, and for more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Well, thanks for listening to us here on 104.6 Planet FM, and we'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 with our AA meeting on air. We'd like to close with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA meeting on air.
Got a power account and live in Central, East or South Auckland, the Entrust dividend is coming your way in late September. And who couldn't use a bit of extra money right now? Getting your Entrust dividend is easy as. Look out for the Entrust pack in your letterbox or email inbox. Check your payment details are all good and let us know of any changes as soon as possible. Then sit back and wait for your payment. For everything you need to know, visit entrustnz.co.nz. Easy as.
Our Earth has existed for 45 million centuries, but this one is special. Ours has the planet's future in its hands.
Technology, entertainment, design, and much more. TED Talks brings you inspiring presentations from speakers across the world. Hear activists, experts, and thought leaders sharing their ideas and stories. Wednesdays at 2 p.m., only live and only on Planet FM.